Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Talking About Platforms. My name is Philip Meyer. I have with me my regular co-host, Daniel Trabucchi. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Philip. Hi, everyone.
And we have with us Primavera De Filippi, who conducts research about the social and legal implications of blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies at the National Center of Scientific Research in Paris. Primavera is a faculty associate at the Bergmann Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard. And together with Aaron Wright, she's the co-author of a magnificent book called Blockchain and the Law. Hi, Primavera. Great to have you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you.
Hi, Primavera. Welcome. Let me welcome you with the usual first question that we have for all our guests. And as you know, the podcast is titled Talking About Platforms. That's what brings us here. But even though we are all talking about the same concept, we are not all referring to the same thing. So the very first question that we'd like to ask you is, what is a platform for you? And also to get a bit more personal and to start knowing you a bit, what brought you to study platforms?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually a very challenging question to define platform. I would say, like, in my view, I perceive it as like, what's the distinction between like a platform and an application, right? It's like, to me, the platform is something on which you can build applications, as opposed to the final application itself. So it's a little bit more on the low level end. So for instance, using my very strong bias of interest in the case of blockchain, I would say that a blockchain is a platform on which you can, for instance, deploy applications. But also, of course, you can also deploy some of those applications that can themselves be platforms, because the application running on the blockchain can itself be something that you can use to deploy other stuff on top of. So like the application of one platform can be the platform for another application. So in my perception of this world, I will use it mostly to talk about those things which enable, support the creation of additional applications on top of it. So it's more of these like infrastructural facet of it rather than, for instance, like the end user application, which I know many people call platforms too, because we call Facebook a platform, right? Which it could be, because indeed even Facebook is something that people can plug apps on top, right? So, but if we have to really give like a narrow definition of platform, I would say that it's whatever provide necessary infrastructure in order to then develop things on top or implement things on top.
Cool. So you're definitely more on the innovation platform side than transactionals or,
yes,
or other types of platforms. And what brought you to this field, how you end up studying platforms?
I guess, is the internet a platform? That's like a very challenging question now. I've been looking mostly at all the questions around distributed network, and starting with like peer-to-peer and then Tor and mesh networking, etc. And looking at what are the legal implications of those new types of decentralized platforms. And then I entered into the I started digging my own hole, my own rabbit hole of blockchain. And I guess this is the main type of platforms that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think we can jump right in here and dive a bit deeper on the blockchain topic, because what I very much like about your work is that you already said you have a strong bias towards the topic, but you not at all look at it from a purely positive perspective, right? You really ask the question, what are the risks of blockchain technology, especially when it comes to reinforcing some existing power structures, or trying to purely rely on a technology layer. So maybe you can elaborate a bit on your idea how to maybe avoid that through, let's say, governance design, decentralized governance. I think these ideas are two that I found extremely interesting. Maybe you can help us a bit understand what's your understanding of the role of governance in the blockchain context, particularly to maybe balance what the technology level might otherwise lead to.
Yeah, so basically, in my trajectory on looking at the legal implications, both in terms of opportunities and risk of blockchain technologies, eventually it always boils down to governance, meaning that if the blockchain is to achieve any of the promises that it is claiming to in terms of automation, immutability, traceability, etc., like all those technological guarantees that are brought about by the blockchain are actually only there to the extent that there is proper governance underneath. And so there is, so people call blockchain technology this kind of like trustless technology, which makes little sense because, of course, there is always someone to be trusted. And calling it trustless is not only inaccurate, but it's also not really helpful in actually defining what the technology really does, because it's a negative thing. This is what it doesn't require, but then what does it do? In English, there is this nice distinction between trust and confidence, where trust is I need to trust someone by putting myself into a situation of risk, because all of a sudden I am vulnerable to the fact that the person I trusted might not deliver on my expectations, versus confidence, which is actually reducing the risk and bringing more assurance and predictability that things will happen exactly as expected. And so instead of calling the blockchain system as a trustless system, in my view, it makes a lot more sense to actually see it as a confidence enhancing machine. But of course, this confidence that is provided by the technological guarantees of the blockchain do not actually hold if the underlying governance of the blockchain is not properly managed or designed. And the problem is that the more we move towards a decentralized system, the more difficult it becomes to ensure that the governance is not being co-opted by powerful actors, is not being concentrated into the hands of a few that therefore might have the possibility of manipulating the system. And because everything is pseudonymous, it's also hard to know and to even identify the fact that governance is centralized. So if you have like a perfectly decentralized design with token voting, etc., but then you don't know who controls the majority of those tokens, there is really little accountability about who actually controls the system, because it might look as if there is like thousands of different accounts, but if all those accounts are controlled by one person, on paper it looks very decentralized, but in reality, in practice, it's absolutely not. So there is all those interesting questions that it is not possible to look at the operation and the functioning of a blockchain without also looking at the underlying governance of those platforms and the reliability and the trustworthiness of those platforms in terms of their technology guarantees is inherently dependent on the governance.
Since you are studying something that is definitely at the frontier, would you mind sharing with us some concrete examples you are referring to, also for our listeners, to get a bit more in touch with these kind of mechanisms, these types of decentralized platforms?
Yeah, I guess the most basic platforms in the blockchain sense will be, like, for instance, Ethereum. So Ethereum as a platform for both creating transactions with like cryptocurrency transactions, so more of like a decentralized payment platform, but at the same time, Ethereum being this kind of world computer in which people can deploy decentralized applications. So pretty much like in the context of DeFi, like all those new types of financial services, but that are no longer provided by banks, but rather provided by our exchanges or brokers, etc. Now everything can be codified, and all those digital assets can be traded according to specific conditions, and those conditions are specifically entrenched because they have been recorded as a smart contract on the blockchain. And basically, that means that they operate independently of any online operator. And so as opposed to traditional online applications, where, for instance, if I connect to Facebook, I don't really know what is happening in the back end. I just see the front end. I can see when the front end change, but I don't know when the back end change. And I have no visibility on what's happening with my interactions. Whereas, but most importantly, I have no visibility. Not only I don't know what's happening, but I have no assurance. I have no confidence that things will not change. And therefore, I need to trust this actor of Meta and Mark Zuckerberg to run the platform in my best interest, which obviously it has been shown that it's not always the case. In the context of a blockchain-based application that is deployed as a smart contract on top of Ethereum or other blockchain-based smart contract infrastructure, then once the code has been deployed, there is high confidence that no one can unilaterally modify the way in which it operates. So not only I have transparency and traceability on what is happening today, but also I have strong confidence that this will not change because the blockchain is designed so that you cannot change it. Of course, there are exceptions. There's always a state of exceptions. And there are cases in which maybe that particular software that was deployed, people do want to change it because maybe there is a bug. Right? And that becomes like, so the benefit of having high confidence that things won't change also means that if there is a problem, we cannot fix the problem. and that's where, again, confidence comes about on both sides. Governance is both important to guarantee that things won't change because no one can manipulate the network. But at the same time, you also want to design the system in which there is a possibility, if everyone agrees, to change a few things because we want to fix problems or just we want to make sure that the system can still evolve over time as the needs changes, right? And so this is where there is this delicate balance to be found, because if you're in a system that is completely immutable and that is designed so that it's absolutely impossible for anyone to request and to propose a change, then that will be like the system will be pretty much gone by now, unless you make this perfect system that somehow managed to cope with this. And so there is, of course, this need of ensuring that even a protocol that is designed to be immutable can actually mutate, which is kind of the paradox in blockchain systems, right? So the blockchain protocols is constantly being updated, like Ethereum constantly creates new releases, etc., which everyone that is part of the network needs to agree to those changes. And that's the important difference, right? When I'm connecting to Facebook, I don't have a say on whether or not I accept those changes because I don't even know they exist. Whereas in a blockchain system, every single participant in the network needs to agree and needs to act in order to accept those changes. So they cannot be imposed top down to the users. They have to be accepted bottom up by the network participants.
So I'm working currently a lot with a startup that is developing software. It's a completely different area, computer vision software, but it's an early stage startup. They're like building a, let's say, product market fit right now. So doing many pilot projects with different partners and different contacts and further developing their software and making a lot of very, very spontaneous ad hoc decisions and adjustments on the like deepest technical levels along the way. So if I would now think about they would need or they would rely on some kind of decentralized decision-making process to make and then implement a decision, that's very, very, very hard from my perspective now to really think about how this could unfold. So this is, I think, something, especially in the early phases, where I see difficulties for decentralized organizations or systems up to the point where you have a system that is running, that is at least to a certain degree adopted, and where it's not about fundamental changes anymore, but more on the like bug fixing level. And then also the second part, you talked about the concentration, for example, of tokens and then associated voting rights. If I think about that, this can help maybe in the beginning to concentrate the voting rights and then make these ad hoc decisions because you have the majority of the right as a like building organization that builds the foundation of a technology or foundation or whatever type of organizational form it is. But then giving this away, this is also something I think is quite difficult then for an organization because you have to think about that like from the beginning to like use, and your opinion would be very, very valuable to me on that. Is this the case that when you build a decentralized system that you maybe have to concentrate power in the beginning to be quick, to be able to adapt until you have a system that actually addresses some kind of need in some kind of context or market, but you already need to design a mechanism that you then decentralize power, which you cannot corrupt the moment your system gets kind of successful. Do you know where I try to go?
Yes. Yes, and I think it goes back to the initial question of platforms. So in the definition that in the narrow definition that I've given to the platform, there's something very important about those platforms, which is there is a lot of actors that are depending on your platform. And I think, again, so I'm using Facebook. It's a terrible example, but it's actually a good example. Like Facebook, you can create like a lot of apps and deploy them on top of Facebook. The moment in which Facebook decides to change its system or simply to get rid of you, you know, like Farmville. So at some point, all those apps that are built on top of Facebook are inherently dependent on the whims of Facebook. So if you want to create I think platforms and ecosystems are kind of like work hand in hand. So if you want to create an ecosystem around your platform, you need to provide some kind of guarantees. So that's what is the distinction between building an app. When you build an app, no one else except your users are actually depending on the reliability of this app. When you build a platform and you have a lot of people that are deploying things on top of your platform, it becomes very important that your platform is, one, reliable, two, doesn't have the power to kick me off. If I'm building my business on top of you, I don't want you to have the choice to just shut down my app, right? And that's where, again, this question of like, who has the control over the platform becomes very important. I will not deploy my app on top of your platform if I don't have a guarantee that this platform will continue to support me. And again, it goes in both ways, because of course, if there is a bug in the platform, I want to make sure that people can fix it. But at the same time, I don't want to have any single actor or group of actors that will have the capacity to kick me off of the platform. And there's a distinction between centralized platforms, where I have much less of those guarantees. And usually it's harder to create an actual ecosystem around a centralized platform than it is around a decentralized platform, where you do have some degrees of guarantees that if I deploy on top of it, I'm going to stay there. Unless the governance structure, which is not just one person, but unless the ecosystem of actors involved within this platform decides that I should go. And I know exactly what are the conditions by which they could vote. So I think there is like a... like, of course, if I'm creating a startup and I just need to deliver on a product, much better to be centralized and run fast. But if your goal is to create a broader ecosystem of actors building upon my technology, it's a little bit different. And I could still do it in a platform style, and I could go faster, but maybe I will go faster, but I will have a much harder time convincing people that it makes sense to deploy on top of my system. So decentralization is also creating more incentives for people that do not trust at least the operator of the platform. Well, then decentralize these operations. And if I don't need to trust anyone, I just need to trust that the underlying governance of the platform is sound.
I was wondering, what's your opinion regarding the user perspective on these type of platforms? How do you see their diffusion? What are the main barriers that you perceive for users to approach these types of platforms, let's say, in contrast to more traditional, centralized, not blockchain-based platforms?
Yeah, I think there is some risks that are reduced and there are new risks that are introduced. There is less counterparty risk, so I don't have to rely on the belief that one actor will continue to act in a particular way that is in my interest. At the same time, I need to trust myself to be able not to do mistakes. And it's interesting because most people don't like that, especially when we're talking about financial goods. If I lose my password, I can just ask a new password to Facebook and I'm just going to get it. I can recover my account quite easily because there is a centralized entity. So this trusted intermediary has the benefit of ensuring that as long as they operate well, I can trust them to help me if something goes wrong. In the context of a fully decentralized platform where you don't have this operator, if I lose my key, I lost my key. And there is no way around. No one can give me back the key. And no one can give me back access to my account. So, of course, that creates a lot of new challenges. And what's interesting is that, indeed, there is a lot of new intermediaries that are actually emerging in the blockchain space in order to do exactly that intermediation task of, Well, don't worry. You don't have to save your keys because you just create an account on my platform, which is interfacing with the underlying blockchain network. And I'm going to save your keys. And then you don't have to worry. But then, of course, what happened is, things like FTX. all of a sudden, you become the custodian of my assets. And if I shouldn't have trust you, well, too bad. There is no way back either. So the users just need to pick. You cannot have a fully riskless platform. You just have to pick which risk will you rather cope with. Will you rather cope with the risk that your keys get compromised, someone hack into your computer and steal your thing, you lose them, etc., and then you have to really be in charge yourself of securing your assets? Or would you rather rely on a trusted intermediary, but then, of course, you need to trust that intermediary to not do mistakes either? So essentially, it's just a trade-off between those two.
So you mentioned FTX, and when we record this episode right now, the former CEO of FTX faces the court in the United States, which like definitely has some, I would assume, impact on the whole, like, let's say, blockchain, crypto, DLT. I don't know if you can call it industry, but the companies or the initiatives that grow, use this technology, grow this and create value using this types of technology and the trust in it. So a couple of years ago, I was following new ICOs, initial coin offerings, new ideas, new ventures, new initiatives popping up, mainly on a, or partly on a weekly or even daily basis. In my personal perception, this kind of slowed down quite a bit while the hype around AI technologies driven by success of the generative AI movement and open AI, I think, accelerated a lot. What is your take on the current state of the blockchain and crypto? I don't know how you would call it, industry or community. Is it still as vivid as it was a couple of years ago, or do you also feel like there's some maybe maturity, maybe slowdown, maybe some kind of tail that we're in and have to pull out again?
I think that's what happened. I mean, there's those constant, bull market, bear market in the crypto space. The issue is that when we are in a bull market, you have very, very many initiatives that emerge. Most of them are only there in order to make money fast and not really in order to bring very interesting innovations, but rather just like, okay, there seems to be a system that works and you can make a lot of money with it. Let's just make hundreds of them because that seems to be working until it crashes. So I will not say that it's less vivid. I actually think that during this bear market, it's just as the innovation is happening at the same pace. It's just that it's no longer diluted with all these random projects that are not really innovating or interesting, except that they are trying to make some speculative gains. So in my view, and that's maybe because I'm deep inside my own rabbit hole, it's actually like very little has changed in terms of the fundamental ongoing progress and innovation that is happening. It's just that it's maybe less visible because there is less desire of communicating about scammy projects. but I don't think, there's lots of people now say like, yeah, NFTs are broken. It's like, no, they're not broken. What was broken was during the bull market, all those projects that were like selling random gifts for millions of dollars that was broken. So now it's going back to normal, I will say. And people are working on projects that have value, and people are perceiving these values, and maybe it's less visible to the layman because there is less communication about it. But many of the communication was essentially just like a random PR, just in order to shield a particular project. So yeah, to me, like, I think actually the bear market is usually the place in which the real innovation happens, because there is less of those distractions.
Now we are reaching the end of the episode, and our usual question is actually looking ahead. So what's coming next on your research direction? What's coming next, in your opinion, in the world of platforms that is interesting to observe?
Yeah, so right now I'm actually, I'm in the middle of this European-funded research project, which is called BlockchainGov, which in this moment we're really looking at the constitutionalization. I think it's very interesting. And this happens, it's not just specific to blockchain. I think there is increasingly this this felt need that some kind of constitutions are required in order to indeed create some of those guarantees about how, what is legit and what is not legit to do on a particular platform. You know, and we've seen it. So I'm using Facebook a lot, but I guess it's a famous platform. But like, you know, like for instance, Facebook introducing its own like oversight board and stuff like that, and like starting to realize that people want guarantees. It's, you cannot be in a place in which one person decides for the destiny of all the users and so forth. So there's a degree of constitutionalization that is emerging both in centralized platforms, but also in decentralized platforms. And you have increasingly high numbers of blockchain systems that are now drafting their own constitution, which is interesting because one might think that the actual protocol, the actual code, is the constitution because that's the most entrenched type of rules. But because the governance happens outside of these technological codified rules, people have realized, like people start starting to understand that off-chain governance is just as important, if not more important, than on-chain governance, because off-chain governance is the thing that can actually change the on-chain code. And therefore, if there is a constitution on-chain, there also needs to be a constitution off-chain to dictate what can be done and how can the rules be modified, and how do you amend the technological platform. So there's this really interesting process that I think we're observing at the level of different typologies of platforms, of trying to create rules about how to change the rules and trying to entrench those rules in a way that can provide some degree of accountability and legitimacy in the way in which those rules are being modified. And in the blockchain space, I think it's particularly relevant because especially in an ecosystem in which it's so easy to leave, because I can just cut and paste, I can fork, I can, it's a less costly exit, then loyalty becomes very important. So I need to demonstrate to my users that there is legitimacy in the system. And therefore, even if that decision is not necessarily the decision I like, I will stay onto this platform because I know I want to remain loyal to this platform because I know that this platform is operating according to accountable rules. And I would rather be in a platform that is used by many people and that I consider trustworthy of my loyalty, as opposed to exiting into, I just copy and paste the platform into a new platform, but there is no users, right? So I think the concept of loyalty becomes very important, and constitutionalization is a way of actually demonstrating that the system is operating according to legitimate rules and therefore is more likely to maintain their user base or attract new applications to deploy on top of the platform.
Pretty interesting, and I'm very much looking forward to reading about your findings. And I'm pretty sure that many of our listeners are so too. And before we go, we always ask our guests, what is the best way to follow your work and maybe even get in touch in case someone is interested to learn more?
Yeah, so most of the research I'm doing right now on these questions is within the framework of this research project, which is BlockchainGov. So most of the stuff can be followed on the website, blockchaingov.eu, or on the BlockchainGov Twitter account. And with regard to my own contact, I think Twitter is probably the best. So that will be at Yaweo. And yeah, I think that's it.
All right. We will add this to the show notes so that listeners can find it. And with that, I can only say thank you so much, Primavera, for coming on, for the great conversation about blockchain and about your research in the field of blockchain and distributed or decentralized platforms, I would say. Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. Just the best for your upcoming work.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.